Like Leo said, it's always a great opportunity when we have the chance to enlighten ourselves. So let's enlighten ourselves. We're going to talk about the mediums book as we have been. The first part of chapter 23, which is about obsession. And obsession is a very serious topic. So let's start by Item 237 is the first item in this chapter, and the first thing that the spirits say is that among all the things, among all the difficulties in practicing spiritism, obsession is the most difficult one. And we're going to see throughout the chapter why it's the most difficult and why mediums especially should pay attention to obsession so they are aware of what it is and how they can prevent it. And obsession basically is when spirits wish to control other spirits. And what we have to remember is that this is only done by inferior spirits. So the good spirits, our mentors, our guides, are not obsessing us and will not obsess us. They will guide us and they will give us advice and help us in fighting inferior spirits. So it's not all spirits, only the inferior spirits. In summary, obsession is a spiritual influence and is the persistent negative influence of one spirit onto another. And we'll see that most people believe, oh, only a discarnate spirit can obsess an incarnate spirit. But actually, there's different types and there's different degrees, so we're going to talk about it. But before we talk about obsession, we have to talk about obsessor. And what is an obsessor? Obsessor comes from the Latin word obsessori, one who causes obsession that hinders. Now we have to remember that these obsessors are spirits who are part or are part of our companionship, our intimacy, and sometimes have very close ties to us. So they're not stranger to us most of the time. We also have to remember that these spirits themselves are going through difficult times. They are victims of themselves, of their own negligence and vigilance, and they have transferred this responsibility of failure into another person or into another spirit. So they blame the other person, the other spirit, for the misfortunes, for the whatever has happened to them, and that's why they become obsessed and choose to obsess those spirits and those people. What we have to remember is that they are also, like it says here, affected by their own affliction. So there's not spirits or people in their right mind. They're going through some trouble. They're having some difficulties. They do not accept the affliction, whatever has happened to them. Now, the other, when we talk about obsessors, we have also talk about the different types of obsessors. And there's two types of obsessors. One that has no evil intention, and one that is attached, quote-unquote, to evil. First thing I would like to say is that nobody is entirely evil, okay? No spirit, no person is evil, was born to be evil, will forever be evil. No, there's just different degrees of the development. Some spirits are more developed than others, but there's no evil person. So what is an obsessor that has no evil intention? Well, those are the ones that don't have the conscience of what they're doing that's bad. They are trying to act out love, care. They care for the person, for the spirit, and they desire to stay next to that person, to help that person, to love that person, but they don't know that by doing so, they're harming that spirit or that person. An example in one of Andrea Louis' book is of a father. As the father passes away, and he comes back to the house where he was attached to his family, and whenever he gets close to his daughters, the daughter starts crying. And he's like, I don't understand. I'm trying to help and I want to love. And he gets very depressed too because he's there. He's trying to help his daughters, but he can't. And the reason why he doesn't understand is that he has in himself these feelings of solitude, of missing. So he's passing that to his daughter who's crying, who doesn't understand what's happening. So he doesn't understand the harm that he's causing. And that's mostly the case in these obsessors who don't have an evil intention. They love us, they care for us, And they're trying to help us, or we're trying to help others, but we don't realize by the way we're trying to help, we're actually not helping, but obsessing. And then the second type is the one who is attached to evil, and they're only transitorily given the impression, the fascination of evil, okay? So these are spirits who are unbalanced and who are trying to introduce this harmony in our lives, in lives of others. Now, they give us in the book examples of two spirits. The first one they talk about is about spirits, in this case, about spirits who just try to do evil because they're jealous of people who do good. So one of the examples they give us is about of a spirit who attaches himself to a family, and they say the family is an excellent family. So he attaches himself, but he's not able to deceive the family. And the spirits say, ask him, why did you attach yourself to this family? And he says, well, bad people don't make me envious. So that's why he picked that family. They also give us the case of another spirit who says, these spirits are moved by the cowardly desire to take advantage of the moral weakness of others. So the spirit attaches himself to a person who has moral weaknesses and who has limited intelligence. And when he's asked, why did you pick this person? He says, I have an itching to torment someone. A reasonable person would drive me away. I stick to this idiot because he has no active virtue that would enable him to withstand me. So these are the two types of spirits that we would classify as those attached to evil who have an intention to do harm, to do evil. Okay? But when we talk about obsessors, we also have to talk about obsessed. The people on the other spectrum, the ones who are being obsessed. And obsessed are spirits that are tormented, persecuted, or harassed. So those are the ones who the obsessors are inflicting. We'll see their minds, or thoughts, we'll see how that works. But what we have to remember is that obsessed, in a sense, are not innocent. Why do I say they're not innocent? In order for a person, for a spirit to become obsessed, they have to, what we say, open the door, right? They have to let that influence enter by their thoughts, by their actions, by the things they say. They open the door for that obsession. But somebody might say, well, I don't do anything harm. I don't think an evil thought. Well, it might not be from this lifetime. But we have to remember that we're millennium spirits. And that we have a baggage that we might not remember, but the spirits, in the spiritual realm, people that we know here who unconsciously might be aware of that. So we have to remember that we're not just us from what we have done for the last 20 years, for the last 40 years, but what we have done for the last 1,000 of years, right? And so if a person doesn't, you know, is aware of what that might have caused, or whether in this lifetime, it might be of another lifetime. Because as, like I said, we are everything we are, not just of today, but everything we have been. And we have to remember that in this meaning's book, it says, we are all obsessed in a sense. We have been, or we still are. So this is very common, and we might have been an obsessor in the past, and we might be obsessed now. So it's just something for us to be aware, to see how we can deal with it, but it does happen. And like it says, these doors are from present death or from those of previous incarnations. When we talk about obsessors and obsessed, we have to talk about the different types of obsessions. There's four different types. These are the four types: incarnate to incarnate, discarnate to discarnate, incarnate towards discarnates, and discarnate to incarnate. So we're going to go over each one of them and see. So the first two are obsession, incarnate to incarnate, and discarnate to discarnate. So what does incarnate to incarnate mean? It means people here on earth incarnate. So me, you, us, everyone we know here who has a physical body. And what the medium's book says is that this obsession is greater than we think. that it happens more often. But you would say, what does that mean? Well, these obsessions usually are people who are jealous, envy, who have a desire to have pride, power over others, and who sometimes exert that power, and the person being subjected doesn't even realize that they are being obsessed, right? That there are people who are convincing them of doing other things. And there are a couple examples, like, for example, a husband. A husband who limits his wife's freedom, who keeps her under his domain of his will, who doesn't let her do anything without his permission. But also, it can be the wife. The wife who is a tyrant, who enslaves her husband, who makes her husband do whatever she wants, whenever she wants. But also, it can be parents. Parents who have the belief that they have the right to govern their children's life, that their children should do whatever they say, that their children should not have the free will to do whatever they want, do not have the free will to take initiative. And there are people who just, because they're friends, they believe that they can influence others, that they believe they can change the way people are thinking, that they can impose their will upon others, and they're over the ones that are more passive. So these are all examples from incarnate to incarnate. So it's very common, and we all have to think of ourselves, are we doing that? Right? And I hope we're not, but if we are, we need to realize why are we doing it and stop doing it, and we'll see later tools that we can use. And Leo will talk about next, 2 weeks from now also, tools that you can use when you feel you're being obsessed. And then the second time, when it's discarnate to discarnate, this is when a spirit obsesses over another spirit. So this is in the spiritual realm, is when a spirit directly to another spirit. And in Andrea Louis' book, Liberation, which was written by Chico Xavier, they talk about Gregorio, who is a Catholic priest. And this priest is the governor of this city in the spiritual realm, in the inferior regions of the spiritual realm. And he believes that he's the controller, the judge, the executive chief, and everybody in that city needs to do whatever he says. So all the spirits that go to that city, he judges them based on what they have done. And he convicts them based on what they did in the past and puts them in jail, makes them do things. So he believes he has the right over those spirits, and he has the right to convict them and to make them do whatever he wants them to do. So that's a case of discarnate over another discarnate. Any questions? No? Then the other two types are incarnates towards discarnates. And you're going to say, how can that happen? Well, it's actually more common than we think. This usually, like they say here, is an expression of egoistic love, a possessive love that an incarnate, so one of us, somebody who's here on earth with a physical body, has over somebody who has passed away to the spiritual realm. They have this mental fixation attracting this incarnate, thereby holding them back from terrestrial reminiscence, basically from terrestrial things, from us. Now you say, how do I do that? Or what are examples of that? Well, two cases come to my mind. One is when somebody passes away and the people who are left behind fight over the inheritance. And all that fighting and all those thoughts of that person, of those people fighting of the inheritance, I want this, no, I get that, no, they love me more, so I get to do this. All of that influences the spirits that has passed away. They're directly influenced by this, and they are afflicted by these thoughts, and they cannot disassociate themselves from their family members. So us not unknowingly, by doing this, we're attracting them and not letting them go and not letting them pursue the next step they need to do. So we are obsessing them. Another example might be somebody who was very close to us, who passes away also, and all we do is cry and say, how can you have done this to me? How, you know, it's like about them, they did us harm. Oh, my God, how could this happen? How did you do this to me? How did you let that happen? Instead of accepting, because if you truly love a person, we understand that this is temporary. We understand that we'll be there with them. We don't need to cry, and we don't need to. Of course, it's common for somebody to die. I'm not saying we are not going to cry, we shouldn't cry. But there's a degree when that becomes an obsession, when we don't let it go, and we let the spirit go and us go with our lives. So these are examples of when an incarnate obsesses another discarnate. And the most common of all, and the one we're going to talk about the most, and the one that when people think about obsession, is when it's discarnate to incarnate. So this is the one we hear about all the time, which is basically when a spirit in the spiritual realm, like we mentioned before, only inferior spirits obsess over people on earth, over us. Now, after we talk about these different types of obsessions, we also have different degrees of obsessions. And there's three different degrees of obsession. The first one is what they call symbol obsession, or some people just say obsession. And this is when an inferior spirit imposes himself upon a medium, interfering with his communications. And usually the medium is aware that the spirit who's making this influence is an inferior spirit. So that's the good thing about symbol obsession, that the medium is aware that the spirit who's interfering, the spirit who's not letting other spirits communicate through them, is an inferior spirit. And why is this spirit doing that? Well, most of the time they just want to create trouble. They just want to create disharmony in the environment. It's an annoyance. It's a disturbance for the meeting. And within simple obsession, they also put physical obsession. That means when spirits make noise, when they make raps and other things like that. So those types of obsession fall within simple obsession. Now, like I mentioned before, it's important because as we go through, under simple obsession, the medium is aware that he's dealing with a deceptive spirit. Because as you will see further, the other degrees, the medium will not be aware, or the people will not be aware that this is a deceptive spirit. So the second type is called fascination. And fascination, as they say, is much more serious than simple obsession. And why? Because it's an illusion. It's an illusion created by the spirits to the mediums. And the medium is not aware that this is a deceptive spirit. So how does it work in practice? Well, basically, it's a spirit that attaches themselves to a medium or who is obsessing the medium. And he tries to deceive the medium to think that he is a superior spirit. And his thoughts and his things are what the medium should do. So when the spirit does that, he's influencing the medium and he hinders her reasoning, his or hers reasoning. So that's the way in fascination it works. And the most important is that usually the medium undergoing the process of fascination does not believe that he or she is being deceived. And this is how they summarize in item 239. Fascination is much more serious. It refers to a delusion created directly by a spirit in the thought of the medium, which in a certain manner paralyzes his or her capacity to judge the quality of the communications. Fascinated mediums do not believe themselves to be deceived. It's very important for us to realize the quality, the type of spirits that will cause obsession, simple obsession, and the fascination. The spirits who will cause simple obsession are just annoying, importune. But the spirits who will fascinate a medium are annoying, are deceiving. So the type of spirit they have to be, usually it's more knowledgeable because they really have to deceive. So they use words like humility and love of God and charity to deceive the medium into thinking that it is a higher spirit. But he does not believe in the words he's saying. It's just to deceive the spirit. And a spirit of this class does not like clear-sighted mediums. So the best thing for us to do for not to be fascinated is to be clear-sighted mediums. What does it mean to be a clear-sighted medium? It means that all the communications we receive, we let others examine, we let others question. We do not believe it just because it says so. We do not believe that we are the only ones that this spirit can communicate through and we are the owner of that spirit, whatever you can believe in. Now, another thing that these type of spirits do, and they make the mediums avoid others who are clear-sighted. So we have to be careful when we are avoiding others, and when others are questioning us about the communications, we're like, no, you're wrong, I'm right. No, the spirit is right. So if that type of thing, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, because they give us 9 signs of obsession in the book, that's when you have to question yourself and see if we're being fascinated or not. Any questions? The third type is called subjugation. And subjugation is not only hinders the will of the spirit, but also the mind. It takes control of the patient, of the spirit. And there's 2 different types. There's moral subjugation and corporal subjugation. And the moral basically means that the meaning is drawn to do things that he's drawn to do things that are foolish and reprehensible, but he believes that those things are wise and proper. So I will write something that's not which I would not follow, for example, the spirit's doctrine, but I believe, no, these things are proper and are wise. And they talk that basically moral subjugation, it's kind of like fascination. But what we have to remember is that the will of the spirit is exercised not only on the will, but also on the mind. And that's the difference. In corporal subjugation, is when the spirit acts on the material organs of his victim, provoking voluntary moments or acts. And they give us a case of a young man who, they describe him as neither handsome or young, some man who's neither handsome or young, who has the irresistible impulse to throw himself at a woman and ask her to marry him. And he has this impulse, and he can't react. He can't do anything against the impulse, even though he has no admiration for this woman. At other times, this man feels this pain in the back of his leg and in his back that makes him kneel down, kiss the ground in public. And he's aware of what he's doing, and he's aware of the absurdity of the acts he's doing, yet he can't control, and he can't do anything. So people think that he's mad, he's crazy, but in reality, he's just being obsessed, going through a subjugation process. So he's aware of the absurdity of his acts, but he can't do, because it's against his will. The spirit is directly acting on his will. And basically, he suffers horrible consequences. In some religions, people say possession. And in the medium's book, they're very clear and say subjugation is not possession, even though in Catholicism or others, people say a person is possessed. No, a person is not possessed. They might be going through a subjugation. And what they say in item 241 is that 2 main reasons why they choose not to use the word possession. One is because it implies the belief of the existence of beings who are created for evil and forever turned to it. So like I mentioned before, no one's created evil. No one will be evil forever. There's just spirits less evolved and more involved. And the second, it says, it implies the idea of the body being taken over by a foreign spirit. And that's not possible. So it's kind of like cohabitation, but in reality, it's just a coercion. So basically, it's just a very close connection. But the spirit never leaves the body of the person being subjugated. It's not like this spirit, the spirit goes away and another spirit comes and takes over. No, it's a coercion. It's a very close connection. The spirit of the person is still there and still connected to the body. So that's why they say the word subjugation expresses our thought perfectly. So even though you might hear other religions say that person is possessed, no, there's no possessed because the body is not being possessed by anyone else, by any other spirits. Now they summarize for us in item 242, as we have said, obsession is one of the greatest obstacles of mediumship. It's also one of the most frequent. Hence, every effort should be taken to combat it. especially since, apart from the personal harm resulting from it, it compromised an absolute obstacle to the purity and veracity of the communication. So it's very important, like we mentioned, there's three different degrees, right? Simple obsession, that might just be annoying. You might just hear noises, interfere in the communication. The medium is that cannot receive communication from any other spirits. But things get worse, right? Like we mentioned, the subjugation, which is the third case, where the spirit acts on the will of the person. So we have to be careful and we have to combat it. Because, like they say, it's the biggest obstacle. So they give us 9 signs for us to recognize the existence of obsession in mediums. The first one, and I would like for us to take turns reading since I've been talking so much. So who would like to read the first one? And I'll grab the mic so our friends on the web can hear us. And it's on now. So who would like to read the first one? Volunteers, I don't bite. Okay, Leo, thank you.
A spirit insists on communicating whether or not a medium desires it. Through writing, auditing, typology, it's an etc., and its opposition.
Okay, so what does that mean? Basically, when a spirit insists on communicating through the medium, through any means it might be, all the time. Number 2. Okay.
The illusion is such that, in spite of the intelligence of the medium, it prevents him or her from recognizing the falseness and ridiculousness of the communications received.
So basically, as we were talking about before, is when a medium receives a communication and he believes that communication is right, even though it might have things that contradict the spirit's doctrine or you have things that are false. So how can you combat it? Have other people read the communication or listen to the communication given to make sure that there's no illusion, that there's nothing in there that's false, right? Because the spirit is creating that illusion like we saw in the mind of the spirit, of the person being obsessed. Number 3. Okay, thank you.
A belief in the infallibility and indisputable identity of the spirits who communicate and who state lies and absurdities under respectable and venerated.
So number 3, what does it mean? That means that the person being obsessed believes that infallible. What does that mean? That means that they are invincible, right? So no spirit that will deceive them because they know better, right? And so no one can question them because they know better. So those are signs of existence of obsession and medium. Number 5, please. Oh, 4, sorry. Oh, her, sorry, yeah. So what does that mean? That means that there are spirits who come and oh, you're such a good medium. Oh, you're the best medium ever. We're going to work together. We're going to write the best book. And they believe that that's true. Would spirits, even mentors, say those type of things to us? No, they'll encourage us. They will give us advice. But they're not going to say, you are the best medium. And you are the best. And we're going to, sold more books than anyone else. No, our mentors would not say those types of things. So, next slide. The last 4. Number 5. Volunteers.
A propensity of avoiding those who could provide enlightenment about situation.
Okay. So like we mentioned before, mediums avoid others who are clear-sighted. So if somebody questions them, they avoid them. Oh, no, that person doesn't know. I know better than that person. Or just avoiding them altogether, not seeing them, not talking. So when you're trying to avoid others who would question you, That might be a sign. Number 6.
Offense taken at criticism of communications received.
So if anyone questions the communication, they get offended. How could you question me? No. The communication is perfect. It's a good spirit. You know. So when you take offense, that's when it might be a sign. Number 8. Oh, sorry, 7.
And it's a sign and an opportunity to write.
What does that mean? That means that the spirit wants here, I'll take it. That means that the spirit wants to write all the time. Doesn't matter if it's in the mediumistic meeting, doesn't matter if it's at work, doesn't matter if it's at 2 o'clock in the morning, just want to write. If that's happening, then that's a sign. Because a good spirit will know that the time to write is during the mediumship meeting, the time to manifest is during the mediumship meeting. So if that's happening, that's a sign. Number 8.
Any physical coercion that dominates the will and forces one to act and speak without wanting.
So in a mediumistic meeting or something, a person does not want to speak, does not want to write. It's not the right time. And the spirit comes and speaks or comes and writes. It's an opportune time. So that's a sign. You know, basically the domination of the will of the person. That's a sign. And last one that they give us, Leo, since you started, you can finish it for us.
Continuous noises and disturbances around the medium that either caused by the medium, him or herself, or that have the medium as their target.
So if there's noises around the medium, or if the medium is creating those noises, that's not normal. So that would be a sign that there is an obsession. But for those who do not participate in mediumistic meeting, can we be obsessed? And what are the signs for those who do not participate in a mediumistic meeting? So I'll read these. They're short. There's only 4 of them. So first is a person that says things or does things he or she would never have said or done in the past. So that's change in behavior. I'm a very calm person. I'm very calm. I speak softly, and all of a sudden, I snap at people. I'm disturbing. I'm noisy. I'm loud, right? This change of behavior suddenly, this change of things I do, things I say, or the tone of voice, you know? Of course, we have to be careful. We all have, like, I'm not saying if I get mad, I'm being obsessed, you know? No, because that's part of my personality, and I have gotten mad in the past, and I have reacted that way. But if things suddenly change, the personality of that person was one thing and now it's another. 2, person is compelled to do things but does not know why. So all of a sudden I have impulses to do things, to, like, for example, go to the mall and I start shopping and I do all these things. And I don't know why, I'm just doing it unconsciously and I'm like doing it and I get home, it's like, what did I do? I don't know why I'm being impulsive. I don't know why I did those things. Person removes him or herself from his or her loved ones without any apparent reason. So I'm very close to my family. I hang out with them, we meet, and then all of a sudden, I don't want to be with my family. I don't want to be with my friends. I don't want to be with my loved ones. That might be a sign. Number 4, person gets sick and the doctor does not know why. So the person gets sick, or always getting sick, and no one has decided why they're getting sick. No one understands why they got sick or how they got sick. Now we have to put all of this in context, right? There are diseases that doctors still don't know. So it's not like if you have one thing or the other, you are being obsessed, or we are being obsessed, or somebody else is being obsessed. But these are just signs that together might be a sign that we're being obsessed, right? And if that is happening to us or to one of our loved ones, what should we do? We should come to a spiritual center and seek help. Speak to somebody at the center, see if that is really what's happening. Or maybe it's just we're going through a rough phase. Might not mean you're obsessed. And like we said before, we have all been obsessed, the medium's book says, and we'll all be obsessed sometime or the other. These things happen. It's normal. I'm not saying it's normal, but they do happen. So now we're going to read together item 244. So I have photocopies of the book, and I'm going to pass them around, and I'm going to ask people to form little groups. So let's see. You're over here, you're one group, and you're one group, and you guys are one group, okay? So let me give you guys this. Here, share here. And now you can have one together. Here. And here. So if you guys can form your groups, and I don't have a lot of copies. Can you guys share? Okay. So you will see that it's a one page, and this is part of item 244. If you guys can read from the top of the page until before it says to summarize. So it's about three paragraphs or two paragraphs. Who's your group representative? Okay. Who's your group representative?
Gianni.
Gianni, okay. Who's your group? Oh. Okay. So let's turn our chairs so you guys can see the screen again. This book, so that handout was directly from this book, chapter 23. So, we'll do each question. If each group representative can, and we wanted to go beyond the no, I should have put this before, where and how are we influenced. So, this group, please, will start us with question number one. What was your group answer?
For the first one, we said no. And where and how? Everywhere, because we are all human beings. We are on the same planet Earth. We are being influenced equally. Of course, every person is a person. However, at work, family, social gatherings, if you are helping somebody in a humanitarian cause or something, number one.
Yes, yeah, thank you. Group number two.
Okay. Is the influence of spirits only in mediastic meetings? I would have to, along with the group, would say no. And are we influenced by spirits? Before coming to the spiritist meetings, I had an inclination that something else was going on. So once coming into the spiritist meetings, there was a new vocabulary of what I was already experiencing. And I have always known that there was some type of secret enemy. And a secret enemy was sort of like either a good conscience or a bad conscience. And in the meetings, that secret enemy is either a bad spirit or a good spirit or one that is the obsessor against my way of living. Somehow I've been on even keel. That's and the trouble with this is there's so many different avenues, and just to give a short summary of this, it's very difficult.
True,
this can
true.
Run into being having to express it in more definition.
Okay. Well, thank you. Group number three.
I just want to add, because everybody answered already the question, and we agree. Just to give an example of how this influence can happen in our everyday lives, for example, we're talking about adolescents They are so vulnerable because they are in this transition, emotional, mental transition, and hormonal, physiological speaking as well. And they are much more susceptible to these changes because of the conflicted feelings that they have inside. And you can see how they shifted. And they shift, like they're so moody overall, they are so moody. And they used to love their parents, and suddenly they hate it. They hate them all, and they don't know why. And it's not only about previous lives. It's sometimes about if they are more sensitive to these influences, even if they are not aware, they may start, you know, just being influenced by sometimes the obsessors of parents themselves. Not necessarily the obsessors are directly theirs. They're obsessors. They have this strategy to really take over a loved one to really hurt someone else. And this is one of the examples.
Thank you. Now, question number two. How is mediumship faculty a tool? And they were very specific in the text, which we read. So, group number one.
How is the mediumship faculty a tool? It is a tool because you have this awareness that you, for example, if you receive a message, you know that you shouldn't just trust it blindly, but submit it to a friend's criteria. Say, what do you think? Do you agree? You think this is, you know, or for example, if you are inspired, you think, you read, you receive an insight, then bad or good, well, take some therapy. Ask your therapist, what do you think? You think I'm too much ahead? Am I seeing things clearly? And I'm having this behavior, and so.
Okay. Group number two, do you have something to add to the answer?
The faculty is a tool, and the reason why it's a tool, it brings out the idea where are you thinking before you act, or are you acting before you think, or are you just not thinking at all? And basically, it also, from what I've gotten from the classes in the past, is why am I doing wrong and not doing right? And how can I still maintain to do right and avoid doing wrong?
Okay. Number three, would you like to add something? I'm looking for a specific phrase that they use. No one's
I'll give that to you, Karen. Mediumship enables men and women to meet their enemies face to face, if we may so express ourselves, and combat them with their own weapons. Without this faculty, evil spirits act in the shadows, and counting on their invisibility, they truly do much harm.
Exactly. Very good. Thank you. Anything else you would like to add?
Yeah. It's all about vibrations, and the mediumship is about the awareness of the differential vibrations, if we could say this way. Because some people, they are constantly being targeted by different vibrations, they're influenced, but they are not aware. And the difference between sensible mediums and the overall, you know, subliminal mediumship is the fact that mediums usually perceive what others can't, or they are not there yet. So you come here and you see the spirits and you see how they are working, and you tell people, they're like, really? Yeah, they are, because we are all spirits and they are here. And you observe when people are being obsessed very easily, though other people may not see it. And you may see it more coming stronger on you by the difference of vibration. So we know if a good spirit or bad spirit is assessing us by the feelings. Whether or not a spirit approaches and we feel good, then it's a good spirit. And if we feel weird, somewhat, not very well, uncomfortable, something that is not pleasurable, then, well, it must be something else. And in that regard, we can use mediumship to perceive better these influences.
Thank you. Thank you. She summarized very well, so there's no need. But after the section that we read, they basically say this. Danger is not in spiritism, since on the contrary, we can use it to control and to save ourselves from the constant rigs to which we expose ourselves without realizing it. So spiritism did not create obsessions. Spiritism did not create spirits, right? We just became aware of these, different things through the spiritism doctrine and through the mediumship of others who were able to bring us this knowledge from the spiritual realm. And what they say in item number 2 is the real danger consists in the propensity of many mediums to believe themselves to be the sole instrument of superior spirits. So it's us ourselves, the risk in us ourselves believing that we are only tools from superior spirits, if we are only influenced by good spirits. It's us that are putting ourselves at risk, sorry, Daniel, if we believe that. Because this blinds us to believe that there are inferior spirits and there are others who do not want the best for us, who are influencing us. Third I'd like to bring is that in responsible mediumship there is no danger. So just because someone's practicing mediumship, that doesn't mean they'll be obsessed, and just because they're not practicing ostensive mediumship, like Ben said, that means they'll become obsessed or are obsessed. So it's not one or the other, right? It's the way the person's living, it's the way they're protecting themselves, and everyone is at the mercy of ourselves, no matter if we're practicing ostensive mediumship or not. And this is not part of my section, but I didn't want us to leave here and say, oh my God, there are all these spirits who are obsessing us. And Leo's going to talk about 2 weeks more about this 2 weeks from now. But how can we receive then good influences, and how can we protect ourselves from being obsessed? So just a couple little tools. One, attune ourselves with superior spirits. What does that mean? That means prayer, right? Good actions, good thoughts, right? That's how we can attune ourselves with our superior spirits, with the superior spirits, with our mentors. 2, observe our thoughts and feelings. Like Vanessa said, how do I feel? If I don't feel good, then that doesn't really mean it's a good spirit, right? Or more evolved spirit. But if I feel bad, so know our feelings, know ourselves. More importantly, know ourselves as a millennium spirit, because who we are today is not from the past 20, 40 years, but from the last 1,000 years. So we are knowing ourselves and knowing that we are susceptible because of things we have done in the past. And positive attitude, love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? That's Jesus' command to us. So make sure that we're practicing love, not only towards ourselves, but also towards our neighbors. So I leave everyone with these thoughts, and unless we have any questions, which are more than willing to take, we would be done for today. Any questions now? Well, I'll pass it over to Leo now to close our meetings for us. Or Vanessa.
So let us now prepare ourselves to receive the passes. We're gonna